better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this. Radio!
Good afternoon. I'm Daniel Keelman.
And I'm Kyle Lamont.
And this is episode number 152 of Test Patterns, where we bring to you live the first game of the NBA playoffs of the Warriors versus the Rockets.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle, what are you doing right now?
I'm watching the game, man. It's 97-106. I just went to a commercial. This is going to be boring.
What commercials on TV?
Nothing, since I'm streaming it off of ESPN. So it's just a black screen that says, commercial break. We'll be right back. And if I had the music on, it would be like this smooth elevator music playing. But I kind of prefer it. I prefer watching it on this because I don't have to get this constant barrage of ads. And usually if you're streaming it online, it's the same four ads over and over again.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
it's better.
I had a friend over a few weeks, like a month or two ago, and we were watching the college wrestling thing, and we were streaming that off of ESPN, and like I was using Chromecast to send it to my TV, and it was great because there's no commercials. It just plays that music, and it's way less like annoying than real commercials.
Yeah, I've been doing it for like the last series with Golden State, and then some of the Clippers games too. When they were playing against the Rockets, they lost in Game 7. So that's why they're set up for this matchup, which is crazy. Because both teams are like super, super fast on the court. And James Harden is just like giving everybody a hard time. He's the guy with the... You probably have seen him in like photos. Like he's got a really long beard. Very, very trimmed on the outside, but super, super long beard.
I have to admit, I haven't been following basketball. I've only been following it through you, really. And I'm happy for Golden State to win. Because the real reason, though, I'm happy for Golden State to win, I mean, I am glad they're from the Bay Area. I got, you know, some respect for that. But really, it's because back in the day, Kyle and I used to play NBA Jam all the time. And the tournament edition that you had... And actually, it's really funny. It's them and the Rockets because the two best teams to play as on NBA Jam from 94, it was the Golden State Warriors or the Houston Rockets. They were the two best teams. And
now,
so
was old Spud Webb on one of those teams? Or
I think Spud Webb was on the Kings. I think he was only on the Kings. Yeah.
On the Kings. Man, that's old school.
That's old school. And that's a reference just for you and me to enjoy. But,
That guy was pretty good.
Yeah, the Spud Bomb. Yeah. But I do remember, I would always pick Golden State because they had the best stats. And so it's just funny that now they got the best stats now in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, people could make fun of me because I kind of jumped on the bandwagon because I was always a Kings guy. And I only really followed the Warriors through them, like whenever they played. And they were never really good during like the Kings heyday. But they definitely... gone up in the ranks. They're the best record this past season. So,
you're a nut, Kyle.
Update.
Oh no.
108, 101.
Oh God. Edge of my seat. Yeah. Edge of my seat. Give us the play by play, Kyle. Who has the ball? What's going on?
I can't see because the stream is really blurry.
Kyle, you're a horrible commentator.
I know. I should not be commenting.
Yes. Well, so we should talk a little bit. We got to see each other a little bit this last week, which was nice. Last week we recorded in real life in person, which was fun because I haven't done that in a while. And got to do a couple things. Got to go. Let's talk. What I want to talk about, though, Kyle, what I want to talk about is the highlight of your trip up here. The highlight of my year, obviously, was but also the downlight, the worst light of my year is we went to Taco Bell, the Taco Bell in Rockland.
Oh, yeah.
That I when I was growing up, I got a job at Taco Bell at the ripe old age of 15. Worked there for many, many years, made some good friends of the show, many established relationships. Some people still work there. Don't know why, but some people do. And we
found out how long she works there.
How long? What was Julie's total time?
I think I got to say that I think she said like 98.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, it was 97 or 98.
Yeah, it was something like that. Like mid or late 90s.
Yeah. Either way, that's she's almost gotten the 20-year ring, that's for sure. And we went to Taco Bell because the Taco Bell that I worked at growing up, it's still, they've gone through some minor changes inside, but on the whole, it has, it's one of the last remaining Taco Bells that still had the old logo, very outdated interior. Everything about this place was 90s for sure. Yokiro right. Taco well, Bell level 90s.
Well, or there'll be just like stuff like they just moved things all around and they never like fix the floors when they move stuff. Yeah, or the windows will just be like water, like really bad, like watermarks and stains.
Yeah. So, and I told you about how at the entryway there was like there's supposed to be two doors for the entryway, and I told you like, oh, there used to be a door there. Like somebody opened it one time and it broke off
that.
And just never replaced it. So yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the Taco Bell is finally undergoing renovations is what I'm getting at. And so it's going to be closing for the summer, which is deeply, deeply, it's sad. It's a part of my life that's closed now forever. But
yeah,
you're
taking photos when you're there.
I had to.
People in the restaurant were probably like, what the hell's going on?
I don't blame them. I had to because, I mean, the place was so dilapidated and falling apart. But I had many memories there. And so just, I wanted to document my last time there. But it was very fun. So we went and did that. Got to see old friend that works there still, and got to try to get some free food, but didn't get any. And yeah, it was a nice evening. Wasn't that the highlight of your trip too, Kyle?
Oh, of course. I thought you were gonna when you're building up to talking about Taco Bell. I thought you were talking about my crazy, pretty illegal bonfire that my dad and my family put together.
Well, I wasn't gonna bring
it
up, but
department.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you did, Kyle, yes.
Yeah, it was pretty raging, but that's how the Le Mans roll. just throw whatever you want on there. Within reason.
As long as it's not living, basically.
Yeah, no living things.
Yeah.
No, we don't put any gasoline on there. I know a few neighbors, they put gasoline on there. It's like, I don't know
right.
about that. You can just do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, you guys don't play, you don't play dirty. No gasoline.
No, we don't.
Uh-huh. Just bar stools and chairs.
Yeah. No Mad Max fire bonfires.
Oh. Yeah, really? Well, let's not get there yet. But yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
That was quite the bonfire. That was very exciting to see. I remember just driving up to your house and seeing this wall of orange, and I was like, I thought maybe there was like a tapestry for a second. I was thinking maybe they unrolled something and it's like unfurling in the air. Then I realized very quickly, oh, no, that's a fire.
Oh man, Daniel, this game is crazy. It's
what
106,
happened,
108
happened?
With 14 seconds left.
Oh my God! Well, we're not.
Golden State just turned it over.
Well, we're gonna. It's gonna be over before this first segment is over,
yeah,
Kyle. So just keep watching, knowing that. But I'll do the talking duties because I know your mind is on the game. You got to be there for your beloved Warriors.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be over and Golden State will be on top once this is all posted and people are listening.
Oh, God, yes. Everybody, you're witnessing history right now as Kyle's at the edge of his seat as the game is very tight. Who has possession, Kyle?
Golden State does. Was there a foul?
Oh, crap. Well, they're going to immediately foul them, obviously. Or,
Yeah, they've been doing that quite a bit. They all hack
free throws. Free throws. Speaking of, we talked about it earlier, but, man, back in the day, the Kings, Sacramento's Kings, I remember there was a time when the Kings were really, really good, and they lost to the playoffs a couple times, and they were really on fire. And if you lived in Sacramento, it was a fun time to be a King. And man, has that changed since then.
My brother still follows them, and it's like they have a lot of young talent just because they've been at the bottom of the barrel recently. But it's a real pale comparison to the past. That Game 7 loss to the Lakers was a real heartbreaker.
Yeah, we were such
Everyone
rivals with the
that.
Lakers. And now I don't think anybody's rivals with the Kings because, like, who could they even beat? Like, there's nobody there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ended up watching. I don't watch too many, like, regular season games. I keep up with it, but I did watch Golden State and the Kings play, and it was just, like, it was a laughable contest.
Yeah. It was like a practice game for Golden
State.
Yeah,
they just blew them out.
Oh, poor Kings. I do, in my heart, I really do want them to do well again. It'd be great to see them, like, achieve, but they had so many talented players, and just something happened, I don't know what, and I don't think so, but, they'll always be in my heart.
Yeah. Now Chris Webber is doing commentary.
Really?
Yeah,
beloved Sacramento forward, I believe is what he was. I don't know, point guard.
Power forward,
power forward. Power bottom. So, anyway, so yeah, that fun weekend. Got bonfires, Taco Bell, and just all that your heart could contain. Just that's what you got over the weekend. But I'm going to move things a little bit forward, and I'm going to talk about this week's episode. It's the middle of the month. It's a happy May 19th. I hope everybody's having a good Memorial Day planned. If you have something planned for Memorial Day, you should tell us what that is, and you can tell us a lot of different ways.
You can just tell me and Kyle.
Like, just say, like, hey, Daniel, hey, Kyle, why are you guys a two-headed person? But I'm going to tell you both that I'm doing this. Or you could post on our Facebook page, or we'll post something. Tell us about your Memorial Day weekend. We'd love to hear about it, but love to hear some fun things people are doing, trip they're doing, anything at all. With that being said, though, before I get to this week's episode, let's talk about our sponsor. As always, it's Amazon, and if you like to buy things off of Amazon, you can do that and support the show at the same time, and it's very easy. I've said that time and time again, and I'm sorry for those that have heard it a bunch and are doing it. I love that you do it, but I have to tell everybody every time. If you want to support the show on Amazon and buy stuff on Amazon, you can do it by clicking a link that we give you. And what happens is you click that link, and then you make your purchases on Amazon. And Amazon sends us a little bit of your money, and you pay the same price. And they just pay us for saying Amazon. Now, this link can be found in the show description. We say a couple times, like, use this link, Amazon, da-da-da-da. So you can click on that. Or you can go to our website, testpatterns.libsyn, libsyn.com, testpatterns.libsyn.com. Or go to just Google test patterns and it shows up. And then, yeah, there you go. Click on that. Thank you. Thank you, everybody that does it. Shout out to Tyler Plouts, who does it all the time. Love that guy. He's great. He's probably our most ardent supporter of the show.
Yeah, he's a big supporter. That's
big,
great.
Big supporter. Big producer.
Update. Steph Curry, who's was the MVP this year.
Oh, my God.
For the regular season, that is. He just made two free throws. So
oh, shit.
They're ahead. Oh, with 11 seconds, I believe. Yeah, 11 seconds.
Crap.
106, 110.
Oh, God, it's anyone's game. It's anyone's game. Oh, man.
Houston's got the ball.
Let's just all be quiet and watch the rest of this game. I'm sure that
everyone can watch it.
Good podcast. Everybody join us. So I already did the Amazon thing, so let's talk about this week's episode. We got a smorgasbord of things to talk about this week, and by smorgasbord, that must mean three, because it's always three things. First up, we're discussing the new, we haven't done one of these in a while, brand new movie that just came out, Mad Max Fury Road. After that, we're going to talk about a slept-on video game of my choosing, a little game called Mirror's Edge. And lastly, we have the latest album from the old rockers themselves, Faith No More, with their finally reunited seventh studio album, Soul Invictus. So should be a lot of a little bit of everything for people this week. A lot of things going on.
And I was clapping for Faith No More.
So, of course you were. Yeah, no, big fan of Faith No More. So, Kyle, any last basketball updates before we move on to this first segment?
Golden State won 1010 to 106.
Uh-huh.
Or not 1010.
1010.
110. I can't count.
10.
I'm so excited.
that's a big lead.
Team full of robots. They're just shooting things from across the court.
Yeah, no wonder you were so nervous. Man, Houston almost won there. But no.
Oh, man.
1010 to 106, man. Good game.
I'll close
game.
This down.
Good game. High five, Kyle. High five. We did it. Yeah, we did it.
We did it.
All right. Well, if you'd like to rally
with
us.
Now we can actually podcast.
No, I know. Well, let's start this week's episode then. So, first up, we're going to be discussing the brand new feature film, Mad Max Fury Road.
In this wasteland, I am the one who runs from both the living and the dead. A man reduced to a single instinct. Survive.
It is by my hand! You arise! From the ashes! Of this world!
My name is Max. My world is fire and blood, intones Tom Hardy's voiceover while looking over a harsh desertscape of blinding yellows and nuked-out oranges. There's a lizard that scrambles over a boulder, kind of tippy-taps its talons over to Max, and then he crushes it. And then that's the beginning of Mad Max Fury Road, and I just... From the very beginning, I was just, like, really transfixed with this movie. Both the music, the crazy stunts, I'm sure a lot of people have heard that it grossed quite a bit. Didn't, you know, it was going up against Pitch Perfect 2, but it ended up getting the second slot, $45 million in America and $109 million worldwide, which makes sense because I've been pretty, always been a big fan of the Mad Max series, and it's good that it came back in a very, like, I don't know, like, distilled fashion. George Miller, who started a long time ago, just a kind of a breakdown of the series for people that, you know, don't know it. It's a post-apocalyptic movie series. Started way back in 89 when George Miller, the director, he was a surgical director, and that's how he kind of raised his money to fund the first Mad Max movie. And, of course, it starred Mel Gibson, you know, before all the news stories of craziness of late and the biggest roles in the 90s.
I like how that's what you went to first.
Yes, that's pretty much what people know
that's
him for
his claim
now.
To fame. Yeah,
not Braveheart or directing.
No, not winning
acting.
Not Passion of the Christ, not all these other things. No, it's just that.
Yes,
now he brought it on himself, it's fine, go ahead.
Right Yeah, and it sucks because I definitely liked him as an actor and director, but
yeah,
you know, it's just sometimes it just happens. Really lingers.
Sometimes
you just shoot your mouth off and you're a terrible person.
Yes, exactly.
So, and then both sequels were distributed by Warner Brothers, Road Warrior 1981, and that's just like considered by a lot of like action fish now as like a real classic. And I really like it, I agree. And then Beyond Thunderdome, which was 1985, that's kind of more of the watered down, kind of mainstream version of the Mad Max universe with Tina Turner kind of sharing the spotlight with Gibson. But it still had some real weird stuff. Like, I remember there was Gibson, like, or Max, of course, in the movie, he fights against, like, this, you know, warrior in, you know, the Thunderdome, and then it's kind of revealed later on, like, the mask comes off, and it's like a person with Down syndrome, so there's always been a lot of just real weird characters, firstly, and then like just story beats in all the Mad Max series, and it really continues with Mad Max Fury Road. It was originally just Mad Max 4, but it's gone through like a real hellish, like, you know, development cycle for a long time.
Yeah, like,
time.
Didn't he start it in, like, 1998, and it
yeah,
finally
a long time
2015?
Yeah, like, before Mel Gibson's notorious meltdowns that we talked about earlier, like, there was a lot of problems. Like, there was freak weather storms that shut down the whole production in Namibia. Sorry. And, and then Heath Ledger was reportedly attached originally to star, but now it's Tom Hardy who's playing it, who most recently is known as like Bane from Dark Knight Rises. And it's pretty much what I really wanted from a Mad Max movie. Like, it's not really, it's kind of a sequel continuation because there's like quick flashbacks to the Mad Max origin story with his daughter and his wife getting slain, but it's real hazy. Like, I'm sure you were telling me, Daniel, that this is the first Mad Max movie, so that's probably kind of like just went over your head, or maybe somebody filled you in.
Well, like, I can tell you how I felt, but go on.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. It's a good jumping up. We'll go into the plot, which is
yes.
The plot can basically be boiled down to like, they drive west, they drive east, there's a bunch of explosions, some more explosions, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, I mean, I came to this movie, I know what Mad Max is, and it's been a series that I've always meant to watch but never gotten around to, but I certainly knew, like, you know, Mel Gibson, they're looking for, like, gas or water, it's post-apocalyptic, and that's
right,
the
gas
I know.
Wars.
And they like wearing leather a lot, that's what I remember, too. And so yeah. I was curious about this film, and I remember reading some previews about it, how, like, George Miller, he didn't really have, like, a script for doing it. He more just had, a shot list. Like, he had all these, like, storyboards and stuff. And
yeah,
it really makes sense after seeing it, because the script is not important to this film whatsoever. Not to say that the plot doesn't matter, I suppose, but it really doesn't matter. And
yeah,
what I liked...
It's more of a visual and audio.
It is. It is. Yeah, it's more about the set piece moments and just the thrill of the chase and the ride and everything than it is about like some kind of, you know, big thematic thing. Although it is very timely with California right now, but that's another story altogether. I came to it not seeing any of the other movies, and yeah, those flashbacks that happen periodically in the film with the, I mean, like, I kind of put it together like, oh, that's got to be like, I assumed his daughter. I didn't really catch the wife part, but I did get the daughter thing, like something was going on with that. I don't know the full story, but you don't really need to. I came to this film not seeing those films at all. I loved this film. It was this is like one of the best action films I've seen in a long time. It's full, pun intended, it is full octane, like full throttle from the very beginning, and it just doesn't relent. It has like low key moments where like you have your breathing between these big giant action scenes.
Yeah, but and you really need it because it's really relentless. Both in like the audio. I don't know, but I think you went to the same theater.
I did.
It was like going to a rock concert.
It was. Well, and I love, and speaking of rock concerts, like, I just love how it embraces how over the top. Like, you have that so you have, like, this convoy of cars driving around, and that one car has all these, like, minions, like, slaves, I don't know, like, drumming those drums, and the guy with
the
rocket guitar in the front, just, like, constantly, like, I joke to my friends,
he's just,
like,
in the sling, just
he's chained to it,
fire
he's, like,
out of the neck.
Yeah, he's chained to the car, but he has to play guitar when they're driving, and I joke to my friend, like, we can't drive. Like, he's not playing guitar yet. Like, it's just, like, it's always there. But I loved that. I thought, like, that's fantastic. It's just, everything is over the top.
Or even that, like, Tom Hardy's character, like, in the beginning, he's captured by the war boys and Immortan. What's his name? Immortan Joe. They always have crazy names. It's Hugh Keyes-Byrne, who played Toe Cutter in the original movie. And he's, like, this nutsoid warlord with, like, this really white frock of hair and like this horse tooth muzzle. It's crazy imagery.
And that was great. I loved, like, you don't get a lot of backstory on a lot of the characters. I mean, like, Charlize Theron is in it too as Furiosa, Imperator Furiosa.
But I love that there's no backstory. Like,
me too.
You get enough from like that bad guy where you realize, oh, this guy's like ravaged by, you know, this wasteland, and so he's got all these sores on his back like everyone else, but he hides it, and he makes, you know, he puts like a muscle armor over himself, make him look like super fierce. And then with Charlize Theron's character, I love that they never explain like her like bionic arm, like it's just there. Use her imagination.
It's great because there's a little bit of the mystery there, but at the same time, the movie, the fact that it doesn't bother to explain that stuff just makes it feel a lot more like, you know, that's not what the movie's about. The movie's about these giant set piece moments. Here are these people. Let's get to one. And even then, it has some cool twists in the plot. Like, it did a really good job with, I believe it was Nux was his name. Was he the other guy that they take? Yeah.
He's like one of the war boys that kind of...
Yeah, he's like
he
on.
Changes
he's
allegiance,
he's
basically.
Exactly. Like, there's some interesting twists with him, and then there's like this other, this whole story with the reason why they're running away is because like Charlize Theron has basically freed the wives of the main villain. And
well, best breeders. Like,
I know. I'm being a little nice here.
Wives, but
And so they're just trying to escape, basically, the whole time. And you have all these colorful characters going after them. Like, you have that one guy who's, like, a giant, like, banker, and he has, like, the nipple rings on or something.
Right,
like, it's just... Everything is, like, it's very, quirky in the best way. But, just the action sequences. Like, I can't believe how they did. Like, there's so many practical effects, and they're all done so well. It's just...
Yeah,
it's
I was
very
reading
suspenseful.
Can't remember the exact percentage. Like, I'm sure it's just like an approximation, but I think it was like 80-85% practical effects. And, you know, of course, with some like the desert storm that they come across, of course, there's like visual stuff. But I like that it's all practical stuff, just crazy stunts. I heard there was a lot of close calls with the stunt people and the actors. Just,
God,
because there's
surprised.
Just so much crap going on. Like,
I
love that there's like they have these long poles that kind of like pole vault poles, and they go back and forth, and they have like explosives on the end of these like spears, and they're just blowing things up, and cars with like all these spikes on them, and it's very Mad Max. It still retains that kind of like, you know, it's polished and to a sheen. Like the older movies were very like low rent,
But
it still has that like love of cars, old school cars, and then just tricking them out to like be just ridiculous into this, make it into like this, you know, wasteland.
Right. Well, and you brought up the guys with the poles, and what I loved about that, like, I mean, this isn't giving anything away. It's just, I mean, Kyle and I can both say, you know, everyone should go see this. It's a great movie. It's just a really, really great action film. But I mean, like, you have, what I love about all the action sequences is that, and it goes with the whole things not being explained, is they show up with the exact equipment, basically, like, the tools or weapons to basically have a really cool action sequence. And I didn't question it for a second. I'm just like, like, those guys would be on the poles leaping in trying to do that stuff. Like, I buy it. Let's go with it.
Yeah.
Like,
set it up in that beginning scene when they capture
him. Right,
you see all these, like, crazed people. It was mostly the beginning part, but a lot of it reminded me of Metropolis, where you got those people that are the wheels, like all these like young kids, and they're like basically on a hamster wheel, and it kind of controls the water and you know whether they pull things up with the like pulling cars up with the pulley. And there's just like a lot of like real strong visual moments. Miller was talking about how he wanted it to be, you know, without subtitles, like you wanted it to be able to be understood, like in every country, and so
I think he
hit on that.
I think he nailed it. Yeah,
yeah, because he even the action sequence, like I was thinking about like Avengers. I know you haven't seen the second one, but you have the experience of watching the first, and there are a lot of scenes in like especially superhero movies where it's just like so much crap going on, like, and it's not really properly framed. It's just like shaky cam.
There's a lot of exposition, a lot of explaining. Here's what we're gonna do next. Here's the plan and things.
And
like
this has some moments like that, like the kind of the visual language of a modern action movie. You know, like close-ups of the villain. You know, when he's driving, like real quick cuts and zoom-ins.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like real wide shots, like almost, I don't know, like God's eye view kind of look, like especially that one they show in the trailer, like when there's a big explosion, you see like all the convoys behind Tom Hardy as he's up on the pole, and I just love that. There's a lot of moments like that throughout.
There's definitely a sense of scale in the movie, like all these vehicles, they're huge, and they do a lot with what could seem like a little, but they end up using every inch of those vehicles and the space they inhabit. It's a really great detail, and it's just so well done. Like, I don't really know what else to say. Like, it's I thought it was great. I thought that you can go into this not seeing any of the Mad Max movies, and I like that there was like such little dialogue. Like Tom Hardy playing Mad Max, he does a really great job. I thought it was funny that he has a mask on his face. Where, like, you know, also with Bane, he had a mask on his face, too.
And, oh, yeah, at the beginning, because he's a universal donor, so
Well, and they never, I didn't quite understand, like, what the whole blood thing that was going on, but again, like, I didn't care. Like, I just liked that they were going with it and moving. Like, I got the idea, and that was all I needed. And
It makes sense for, like, Mad Max, because that universe is so fixated on, like, resources, and it would make sense that blood or, you know, mother's milk would just be another thing that people would trade.
Right. I mean, the movie is just, it's just one thing after another, and it does a really great job. It's a really, really great suspense film. I can't recommend it enough.
I remember I was going to see it again with you, and just because there's another thing I really liked about it, and it's especially evident in that first sequence, is it's kind of like that sped up I don't know exactly, you might know the
terminology. I know what you're talking
like,
about, yeah,
it's kind of like sped up, almost like stop motion kind of feel to it, through some of the sequences, and it just has like this real connect crazy vibe, like it just feels like you're on drugs or something when you're watching
it. Does it feels a bit manic at times. It's not like the bullet time effect or like just sped up footage, but it is doing something weird there, and I think they're just using less frames per second, which like speeds up the action. They do that, and it does give a very crazy feel to it, and it is effective. And this movie's great. I mean, everyone should really just go see it. It's a really fun ride.
It was a really fun I don't know, I think you were telling me about the Fast and Furious movies where they're like kind of like it's kind of going back to like the old school action type of stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I've never seen any of those, like the recent ones. I know they're like over the top, but yeah. This is the kind of movie that I wish more action movies were like
yeah. Well, the Fast and the Furious movies do scratch that itch to a degree. But the problem with those is that everyone's a superhero in it now, so you kind of like they're fun and well made, but they've lost a lot of the edge to them. But this one is like really gritty, and I agree with you. Like, I wish more things were like this.
I like how one of the main characters gets shot, and they don't necessarily like just keep talking. Like they're out of the action, and it feels more real and tangible.
Right. Well, and I like even how like minor like people that they're fighting, like they'll throw them off the car, but they don't die. They're still they grab onto something or latch on. Like everybody is incredibly overpowered, but you go with it, and there's always a good reason for it. It's just everything, and very very satisfying conclusions when you do get to certain ones. Like the movie really earns them, and
right,
like you know what I'm talking about. I think so. I don't want to give spoilers away. Yeah. So
well, and just one final thing. A lot of people have been talking about it. I like all the female characters in this movie. Like, they're really...
Yeah, it's true.
Like, not necessarily, like, sketched out, because that's not the purpose. Like, the male characters aren't even sketched out that well. You get the necessary visual language and go from there. But they're all really, really strong, and they have a purpose during this, you know, crazy action chase sequence that goes on and on.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, Charlize Theron, she does a really, really good job. I've always liked her. I think she chooses some pretty interesting projects for the most part.
Yeah.
And she's well cast here. She does a good job. So Mad Max Fury Road, it gets a huge endorsement from myself and Kyle as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd actually would like to see this again, too. I totally understood why you wanted to go again.
Yeah, and apparently Tom Hardy is attached to more. Ah. I don't know about Charlize because she was... But both of those actors, they're kind of like, well, this is pretty hellish. Like,
I can imagine.
They really enjoyed the how it all turned out. So hopefully he'll be back for more.
Hopefully it doesn't take 17 years to do. Yeah. So anyway, so that is Mad Max Fury Road in theaters now. And bring earplugs or just enjoy it. Next up, we're going to be discussing the action-adventure platform video game from EA Digital Illusion CE, also known as DICE, slept-on video game, Mirror's Edge. In 2008, EA took a bold gamble and released a different type of game that they haven't really touched or done anything since with the help of developer DICE, and that is the game Mirror's Edge, which has a very, very devoted cult following to it, and it's been announced that there's going to be a sequel of sorts. Still hasn't been really detailed. Maybe the E3 this year will be more. But it was interesting because DICE was up to this point known more for the Battlefield series, specifically Battlefield 2 and Battlefield 1942, and then they still exist today, going on to do the more recent Battlefields, but Mirror's Edge is a very, very different type of game. The plot of Mirror's Edge is kind of not that important, but to give it a very base idea, it's in a futuristic dystopian society where information is all digital, and the main character, Faith, is a runner, and she acts as a courier to get messages and evade government surveillance in doing so. And so that means it's basically at the time it was cashing in on what was a popular trend of parkour, where people would be jumping on walls and running along things. And so they decided to make a game out of it. And it was a really, really interesting idea. I remember when this game, reading previews for it, and I thought stylistically it had a really interesting look to it because it was a very, very white and pale look to the city, but then it had these very bold, obvious colors for certain things, lots of reds and greens, and that's how you kind of figured out where you were going to go next, by following the colors, really. And it wasn't... it was an interesting idea. And the game very quickly came and went. I think it had, like, everybody in the video game world, people certainly took notice of it. And it got a pretty big cult following. But I think, success, sales-wise, I think it did, like, okay. I don't think it was, like, a blockbuster by any means, but I also don't think it was... I think it was very critically acclaimed, but, like, not, like, a huge, you know, money maker for EA.
I remember we got a lot of notice for, like, the fluidity of the movement. The parkour nature of jumping and grabbing things. And it's definitely had a touchstone. Like, as I was playing, I was like, wow, this... the Dying Light people really took this, even down to the fact that you're using the L1 trigger or left bumper, like, as a jump button.
Mm-hmm.
They actually made it even more fluid within that game. But yeah, there's a lot of comparisons to be made with those two games. I mean, this was very linear, not an open world game, but yeah.
And there's no zombies.
Yeah. No zombies.
Yeah. I mean,
but,
the whole,
Another thing is, like, I like the art style, how it's, like you were saying, very stark white with the red for where you're going to jump.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like, the strong female character was a big thing.
Yeah, it's got a really unique, it's definitely got a unique look to it and a really unique gameplay style. Like, there's certainly been 2D games that are focused on platforming, especially in the indie realm as of late, but I don't think there's many 3D games that really embrace the platforming side too much. And for, that's what really makes this game succeed, because it's got some, your power is running and jumping. That's really it. I mean, you do have to interact with guns at times, and that's a point that I would knock on the game, because whenever
it's
you have to interact...
It's pretty sloppy when you have the guns.
It's really sloppy. Yeah, it's
like being able to disarm is kind of like the gun will turn red and you have to like a slow motion maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the controls I thought were just kind of
other than
the jumping, like, they're just kind of like, I'm not used to using those. Like, there's definitely a learning curve at first.
I agree.
You kind of get into it, but most of the time, like they say in the actual game, like the other NPCs, they say just run, like. It's usually best to kind of avoid combat. Well, I've been playing it on easy just because, I don't know, I just want to enjoy the fluid jumping more than
the
combat.
Platform is not going to change on that. Yeah,
because a lot of the reviews, they mention, like, there's quite a bit of trial and error with both jumping but combat when there's a lot of enemies on screen.
Yeah,
that you have to get through or avoid.
I feel like this game... I feel like with a little bit more time, they might have been able to... I feel like they were working with the best that they could, and I am curious about a sequel, because the game, while I think the cult following is... It makes complete sense, because there's really nothing like it, and it is... I could see this game being fun for completionists to, like, want to do again and get better times and things like that. It's got a lot of appeal to it, but... It's certainly... I agree. Like, it's got its fair share of problems. The controls are a learning curve. They're good, not great, but they do the job. And like you said, the trigger buttons for jumping is a little bit different. The one major gripe that I have with this game, and I already complained to you about this, is the... is you have one button that, like, dedicates itself to being an arrow that gives you the direction you're supposed to go.
It's circle on a PS3.
Right, and... The problem with it is that it's helpful maybe 50% of the time at best. Like, more often than not...
Yeah, because if you're indoors, it just kind
of
looks in a general direction. And then if you're outside, then...
It just points towards a building, and you're like, okay, well, like, that doesn't help. And so...
And if you're mid-stride, like, it'll lock, right?
That's my complaint, is if you do it, it's what they should have done is made the arrow just appear on screen and point, but instead your head turns to whatever it is. And I died so many times because of that, and that really pissed me off.
Yeah, I probably would have died a lot more, but you already told me about it, so I used it pretty sparingly and just looked for the red. Especially even that beginning part, like when you're supposed to jump and grab the helicopter, the bottom of it. Before that, I was kind of like, where the hell am I supposed to go? And then, I finally saw the red.
Yeah,
you learn the visual language, because there's no heads-up display. It's just...
Right.
It's all there. And I guess that's why they had the whole circle button, instead of having, like, a waypoint marker, because I kind of like that part, that at least the idea of going through a 3D environment quickly and kind of, it's like a puzzle.
It is.
Because you don't necessarily have to go down a, predescribed
path. No, it feels like a mini,
run along a wall and jump up and... do whatever you want.
Right. It feels like at many points in the games, there are multiple solutions to certain rooms or areas. Like, you don't have to, like, and I would play through it sometimes, and sometimes I would, you know, want to jump this one ledge, and then I decided the next time, like, if I died, I decided, like, oh, this time I'm going to slide under this thing. So it has that variety, and that's good replay. And I agree. Like, I wouldn't have wanted a waypoint thing where it was just a direct line, like a Dead Space type thing of where to go. I like the idea of the arrow. It should have just been an arrow. But anyway, for the most part, the colors do work and they're appealing. Right. But yeah, I mean, like and I think the storyline is pretty bare bones. I didn't really care for it as I was going through it.
It kind of reminded me of like a hacker thriller action movie where it's just like, okay, somebody died. We gotta move these packages, which I don't know what the hell.
I don't even know what I'm doing, and it doesn't. I don't really care though. Quite frankly, I feel like the storyline doesn't matter.
Well, in some of the, well, actually, the dialogue's not bad written, but some of the performances are kind of off. Like could have used a few more recordings, a
couple more takes.
Yeah. One little trivia thing is Rihanna Pratchett, who's the daughter of the fantasy writer Terry Pratchett. She wrote the script, and she also worked on Tomb Raider, the reboot,
in
2013, and Heavenly Sword. So,
okay,
yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, yeah, it's got a really great. It's just I do think there's not really much else like this game, so I can see why people want another one. And I think that with the sequel. Mm-hmm.
They can improve on the formula.
Like, I think they really could fix a lot of the problems that this has and really make a great. I think there's something to this, and I also think it does a really good job when you do have these very set piece jump moments where, like, you have to, like, you know, get caught by somebody else. You're reaching out to grab them or trying to save somebody, and you does. If there's one thing this game does well, and it has a sense of like speed that's really good, but it also has a sense of like your. Like the world that you are interacting with, it like sometimes you're really really high up and like you kind of do like gasp at seeing like what's going on,
like like when you shimmy along walls,
right?
And you look down, and they even looking through like their early concept art, that's what they really want to nail, and I think they do nail that.
Yeah, I do.
But it's always hard, like when you're trying to go quickly in a first person environment and you're jumping around, like even Dying Light, like I think they do that better with that game. Just because they've, you know, they kind of learn from Mirror's Edge their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's always, like, a sharp learning curve with this. And I'm in the middle of the game right now, and I'm not quite over that hump, which is kind of rough because I know it's a short game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another, like, kind of knock on that. I know there's, like, time trial modes and some other, like, kind of other things you fight against your ghost and leaderboards, but I honestly don't care.
No, I agree with you that I'm just playing it for the linear story perspective, just to get the different set pieces that they have in it. And then once I'm done, I'll be done with it. But I do think it's a game that I think would fly under a lot of people's radar. I think the video game community certainly knows about it, but even then, I don't think a lot of people played it. I mean, and I think it is worth your time. I think, you know, it's got problems for sure. I'm really interested in what the sequel will be. It's supposed to come out next year, they're saying. So I hope that they make it better. And
I think they could go a long way with like upgrades to like
to your
parkour.
Like, yeah,
it's kind of like bare bones throughout, and it's just like what ratchets up is like the situations that you're in.
Right.
And I mean, not to keep bringing up the comparison, but Dying Light did that really well with. You know, you keep getting more combat things. You know, you get a hook shot, and it just improves and makes the movement through a city or wherever you are even more engaging.
Yeah,
so I think they'll go down that path.
And sometimes they do have pretty lazy level design where basically you'll get into many times you'll get into a room and you have to get out of the room, and the only thing that's keeping you moving is the fact that the enemies are eventually going to get there, and then they're going to shoot you and you die. And so it's just kind of like, you're really like, that's the best you can do. Like, there's nothing else pushing you to like move quickly. It's just that the enemies are, you know, eventually they're going to come to the room and kill you. So yeah, it gets a little lazy at times, but
yeah, one thing that kind of helped those set piece moments is I kind of like that mix of electronic kind of, rock music underneath it.
Yeah,
like they have the Magnus Birchensen. He's the Swedish electronic musician. And then they have a bunch of contributing artists like Junkie XL, who actually did the soundtrack for Mad Max. So there's some things popping up. Teddy Bears is another Swedish group.
Your dad's favorite.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people really like the main song, Still Alive, which is like the closing credit song. I remember that popping up a lot.
Not Still Alive by GLaDOS?
Yeah. Whoa, wait. No, there's another song.
It is another song. You're right. I'm just playing with you.
Yeah. I'm reading off this site and I read the wrong one.
It's okay.
But you know what I mean, like the theme song from this game.
Yeah.
Like, pops
up. The music is very like the world is really well, like it's a well-designed game. It's got a great look, great idea, great concept. Just little clunky controls, little not perfect level design. I think it's worth your time to play, and I think that a sequel, I'm really, really optimistic that they can really like make a classic. I think this one is definitely not a classic. It's a good game, but not a great game by any means. Like, it's got problems, but it's memorable. Like, I certainly can't think of anything else like this. And usually first-person platformers are not fun at all, but this one does nail it for the most part.
Yeah, it's a really solid weekend rental.
Yeah, it's like a good rental game. Yeah, so...
We're playing it through, like, the PS... It was like a PS Plus game a while back.
EA gave it away like at some event a few months ago. Like they gave away.
Oh, is that how you got it?
That's how I got it. Yeah, maybe you got it from before for PS Plus, but
yeah, it was like an older PS Plus game.
Mm-hmm.
But
Any other final thoughts, Kyle, on Mirror's Edge?
No, I pretty much had the same thing about like I don't know if I'm exactly looking forward to the sequel. It depends on what they do with this formula.
Yeah,
hopefully they go in a bigger and bolder. Yeah. Approach direction.
I hope
like it enough.
I hope they do. People were really reluctant when they announced it because I think they were saying the sequel is going to come out on iPad, and it's just like nobody.
Oh, really?
Like people don't want a game design for that. Like they want a game, and so I'm a little reluctant to put all my faith in it, pun intended. But I'll be following it for sure. Like I want it to do well. I really hope that it is. I think it has potential, but I agree. Like it might also just, you know, be another copy of the same thing. And
right. Cause at E3, in 2013, they did officially announce it. They showed like a real,
it was
short.
It was
like,
barely
demo
anything.
Thing.
Yeah.
It, was,
no, it wasn't even
didn't
like,
show anything about like gameplay or anything.
Yeah. Hopefully this E3 in a few weeks here, we'll get some more info, but so, that is Mirror's Edge, which is out on many, many systems, so go and play it. Lastly, we're going to be discussing the latest 7th studio album by good old rock band, epic rock band, Faith No More, with their latest album, Soul Invictus.
I'd like to burn your head off this summer flame.
Another week, another 90s rock band comes back swinging for the fences. Do they hit a home run or do they just biff it? We'll find out in this next segment. So 18 years ago, I have no idea. Going into this, I had no idea about Faith No More. I kind of knew the name of the band, and looking back on it, like I kind of familiar with one song, Epic.
Yeah.
Other than that, I had no idea who they were. I did know about Mike Patton, who's the lead singer. And he went on to be the main guy behind Ipecac Records. And the background for them, it's been 18 years since their experimental brand of rock has been going through people's ears. They were basically done with touring back then, and they, you know, sent some internal problems, and they also wanted to pursue like very different solo careers. Like I was saying, Mike Patton did the Ipecac and a bunch of other solo projects, like Peeping Tom and Phantomas. Well,
and it's interesting because all of them did really interesting solo projects. Like Roddy Bolton, yeah. the keyboardist, did Imperial Teen, which is nothing like Faith No More. So
right.
like they all went in really different directions.
Yeah, and the bassist Billy Gould did Kula, mm-hmm. Kula Row Records, another imprint. And then the drummer, Mike Borden, he toured with Ozzy Osbourne.
Right.
So they are all been keeping busy since then. And then 2009, they reunited and began performing. And then they're releasing this week on Reclamation and Ipecac Records their seventh studio album, which is Sol Invictus, which is Latin for Unconquered Sun. And it's the follow-up to 1997's Album of the Year. So a lot of it's hard because I still haven't listened to their old stuff, and a lot of the reviews are mentioning that it's kind of just it's not even like they hit reset, it's just like they hit rewind.
Yeah,
and a lot of these songs sound a lot like, you know, their old stuff, like Midlife Crisis and Epic, their mm-hmm. signatures from back in the day. And as I was listening to it, I got to tell you the setup of when I was listening to it. I was back at home, had my old posters on the wall. One of them I don't need to mention. Might be a really terrible Star Wars prequel. And it kind of fit in the moment because it was just like this real dark, brooding music, which I never really listened to when I was an actual teenager back when I lived with my parents. But my sister was making fun of me, and she walked by and she's like, oh, you listen to some real angsty rock tunes. I was like, yeah, it kind of fit while I was laying on my bed there. And, you know, songs like Superhero and Separation Anxiety, you know, they're pretty enjoyable. But after I listened to it that night, I had no desire to go back. I don't know about you, Daniel, but there's certainly a lot of cool stuff underneath. Like, you know, kind of like that, there's some rap stuff. You know, there's really cool, like, piano that pops up in a lot of songs,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know, it never really coalesced in something that was really like worth coming back to for me.
I'm somewhat familiar with Faith No More. I remember hearing their songs on the radio a little bit back in the day, and their controversial music videos on MTV, and you're absolutely right that Faith No More was one of the things that made them so cool is they were a genre bending band. Like, I guess they were a metal band, but they were one of the early ones to do like the, you know, kind of funk metal, but also a little bit of hip hop too. They did try a lot of different things, and they had the keyboard, their piano, I guess. And I always liked that about Faith No More a lot. I admire them because they seemed to like really not give a shit and just do whatever they wanted. And
well, I also forgot to mention that they're from San Francisco. I don't know where they all ended up, but yeah, that's their origins.
Yeah, and they like this album. I couldn't agree more that I didn't dislike this album when I was listening to it. I should go back and listen to more of their stuff. This did make me want to go back and re-listen to their discography. But it was one of those things where during the moment of listening to it, I certainly enjoyed parts of it. I thought, you know, they are doing the Faith No More thing really, really well. Like, they sounds like they haven't lost step, and they've been gone for close to, I mean, what is it, 17 years? Like, yeah, it's like,
yeah, 18 years.
Yeah, so I mean, they certainly feel like they're right back in line where they were, but at the same time, it doesn't sound like they've like I'm not a hardcore fan, so I don't want to criticize it too much, but it didn't seem like they were really doing anything new either. I feel like, you know, and that's, you know, as if you are a longtime fan, I'm sure you want something a little bit different, but at the same time, it's nice to see them, you know, doing what they do well. But I agree, it doesn't have a lot of repetition, a lot of replay value to it after I was done listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly there's a lot of, I mean, I guess they've always been known for this kind of like that, you know, that punk mentality where they're always yelling at, you know, the band or some injustice, and you get a lot of that on this album, but it always felt like, it always feels like kind of scattered in its approach, mostly on the musical end. I kind of grab some of the themes that they're throwing out there. Nothing to really like put together into like a real like conceptual kind of piece.
I didn't put together anything, but go ahead though.
Yeah, but I mean, it just there's just like scattered things. More, it was more like feelings of discontent or something. I don't know. That was the problem. Like it was more feelings and not actual, I don't know, concrete concepts.
Yeah. I don't really go to Faith No More, though, for that kind of stuff. I mean, even if they have been trying to do it, whenever I listen to them, I just took it as really fun metal music that wasn't taking itself too seriously, but certainly like had a really, really good hook to it, too. Like, their songs are really memorable for the most part. But this album, yeah, I mean, it's got... They sound really good, and I like the different things that they do on it, but I feel like it's been material they've done. They've done versions of this before and better. And I feel like most of these songs just, like, they just lack a little bit of, like, they're very angry about something, but I don't really get what, which is a hard thing that happens as bands get older. Like, it's kind of hard to have something new to rebel against. And
yeah, it was kind of like, kind of thought of, like, you know, like Pixies, they had, like, those recent EPs that were really bad. Like,
try not to remember, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of like it's a pale imitation of what they've done before, kind of like trotting out those same things. But then I was thinking about, like, you know, Swans is a band that, you know, it's kind of stayed together for the most part since that time, and they're still like, they still have their sound that's very recognizable for their fans, but they're always pushing it in really bizarre ways, and whether that's adding new instrumentation or new people to the group, or just becoming more and more minimal and gonzo. Like, there's a bunch of groups that are doing this kind of experimental rock and at a better rate.
Yeah, what this actually reminds me of a lot, in a weird way, it reminds me of Weezer, where I didn't feel that anything
completely
was
different bands, but
completely different band. Well, it's just like you kind of start to see the formula after a while, where they're certainly they do it really well, but it just got to a point where
threads are starting to show.
Yeah, like, okay, oh, here's the part where it's gonna like build up and then explode and then back to what it is. Like, and some of the songs, like, I think Cone of Shame is one of the really good songs on here. That was one that they did enough different on that song to be memorable. But even, like, the singles, like, you know, Motherfucker, they're fine, but they also, I don't feel like they're going to be anything that is going to compete with the stuff that they already have in their catalog.
There's no Epic on here. Like, Epic is, like, their claim to fame, and, you know, not that they would ever replicate that, because that was, like, a...
Yeah, that's a... That was a
something from the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's what I... It doesn't have that, like, real freewheeling part of... some of the scattered songs that I've listened of Faith No More.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels more of like, it's kind of a bummer of an album, I think, just because it's more heavy on the darkness, the dark qualities of the band, which they certainly trotted out.
Which makes sense. I mean, yeah.
Okay, not as much of the like goofy, like freewheeling genre experimentation.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, though. That is in line with what they've done before. And I think if you're a Faith No More fan, you're gonna... I don't think you'll be disappointed by this album, per se. I think that just... I just feel like they're a really talented group of guys, and I think they can do better, and they have done better. And so I hope that they don't take a huge hiatus before another album. It'd be great if, like, you know, a lot of bands do that too. A lot of these bands, when they reunite, like, it's really hit or miss. Like, you know, sometimes you can really knock it out of the park with, like, My Bloody Valentine when they finally did their album. But then other times you just kind of have this little, you know, it's not horrible, but it's also not great. And I would like to hope that they can, you know, quickly get back in there and make another one and maybe find their ground really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just an adequate album. It's not it's not terrible, and it's not a classic. A lot of people point to, like, Angel Dust and The Real Thing as really great.
Yeah.
And King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I don't know. I think if you're a Faith No More fan, it's obviously worth a listen. However, otherwise, it's not really anything to go out and seek. I do want to go back and listen to the old stuff now, so it had that effect on me.
Yeah, same here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then I could come back and be like, oh, so those albums that I quoted as being great, yeah, they actually are great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. See if Album of the Year really is Album of the Year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, any other final thoughts, Kyle, on Soul Invictus?
Well, one small little tidbit is sure. I still think they do have some pretty cool funky bass lines from Gould, who also produced like on Superhero, which kind of made it a little fun, at least that first time and probably the last time.
Yeah,
but yeah. Everything still stands.
Well, that's the thing is the band sounds good. Like they're really talented guys. It's just
all the components, just not the. I don't know.
It's just missing. Stuff. Like they just got to find maybe some better hooks or better subject matter. I don't know. Like they're trying. I like they got some interesting ideas going on here, like making fun of like Black Friday shoppers and things like that. Like it's certainly they're finding some interesting things to poke fun at, but it's not really serious, and it sounds like it's trying to be serious. So it's kind of hard. I don't really know what they're going for. That's what it comes off as.
Yeah.
So.
Oh man, that reminds me of I know you didn't like them, but remember Pissed Jeans, how they were talking about like
I remember
crazy
you
stuff
them.
Like hating your boss and
yes.
microwaving food in the lunchroom at work.
Yeah.
I miss those guys. And they're just like this hardcore group, like just really bizarre.
Yeah, you were a really big fan. I remember that.
Yeah. I still have them in my car,
of course.
The CD, and it's just under Mary Poppins, the soundtrack.
Oh. Yeah,
so,
goes hand in hand.
Good combo.
Uh-huh. Well, don't put the wrong one on when your daughter's in the car, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so any final thoughts, Kyle, on Soul Invictus?
No.
I just read it now. Soul Invictus, Latin for Unconquered Sun. So, yeah, anyway. That is Faith No More, 7th album, Soul Invictus. And that is all for 152 of Test Patterns.
Woo-hoo.
Woo-woo. Thank you for listening, as always, everybody. We do appreciate it. We really do. Whenever I hear from a friend telling me, nice episode, listen to it. And more people than I realize listen to this. I do not understand it, but I do hear from people. It's really, really flattering. So thank you, listeners. We really do appreciate it. I hope you get compliments, too, Kyle.
Oh, yeah. I hear some people from college that are listening.
Nice. Very fun.
So.
Well, thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. And that is all for this week's episode. So thank you for listening as always. We'll do another one next week. And this will go up on time. It'll be just a couple hours late, but never will be fine. So, yeah.
Good.
Exactly. All right. Anyway, that's all. Thank
you're going to get a dock and pay.
Dock the listeners pay. They pay me. All right, so that is all. Thank you for listening, as always. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
We care a lot, baby.